Chairman Rahal.
Thank you. Eloise, you heard my opening statement, and I certainly want to reiterate my commendation for you and praise for you. You certainly have demonstrated a dogged determination, a persistence and patience, and your fight for justice for Indian country will be long remembered after all of us in this room have departed. I want to also compare the misperceptions, I guess, that are out there, and salute you, as I said, my opening statement for your Dear Eloise column or hotline that you've opened to answer a lot of those misperceptions and fears, unjustifiable fears, yet because of all the injustices that have been done, you can understand from whence it comes. It reminds me very much of our health care debate and the misperceptions that are out there, and those for their own reasons that may be stirring up opposition unjustifiably on those who stir up the opposition. But again, the fear you can understand, and the anger and frustration, because it has been so long, as we all know, 13, 14 years. You heard this figure mentioned earlier that there is an agreement that establishes a range of $50 to $100 million for attorney fees. Can you help us on how this range was developed?
Well, this range is 3%, and I firmly believe that the attorneys have to be paid $100 million. You know, the danger that we run into is when you start pulling back attorney fees. I'm going to go back a little bit in time before I filed this lawsuit. I went shopping for attorneys. I went to those big attorney firms here in Washington that represented tribes. I asked them to take this case. They told me, no, we're not taking the case. It's going to take too long. We're just not going to take the case. I could not get people to represent me. And these were attorneys that made 20 and 30% off the court of claims representing Indian tribes. And they just wouldn't do it. And then I finally found the attorneys that would represent. And I thought that the amount that they have filed for is very reasonable. Very reasonable. I have no problem. I've done research. I know that it's 25%, 20%, 25% for attorney fees for large cases. And I believe that if we have good attorneys, and we won, let me tell you, we won. In the 14 years, we won huge victories. And it's almost like a surgeon. When my husband and I went through a transplant, I gave him a kidney. We had the top surgeon. Cost us a lot of money, but we got the top surgeon because we wanted to live. I got the top attorneys because I wanted over 500,000 individual Indians to live, and I wanted to make sure they had proper representation. So I think 3% is a bargain basement amount to pay the attorneys.
Can you tell us how this settlement may affect future trust management by the Department of Interior?
Well, I have to believe that if anything that this court case has done has shown the breach of trust that the Department of Interior is in lawful, that they're not doing. And so I believe that there's only one way to go, and that's to change. And I heard Secretary Hayes talk about the secretarial order that Secretary Salazar is doing, where he is going to have a commission and to address trust reform and continue. And I have to believe I met with Secretary Salazar specifically one-on-one on this because I was very worried about the fact that trust reform wouldn't be performed. And I think his leadership, but it'll take all of us to continue to make sure that trust reform is implemented properly for individual Indians. I guess I just have to believe when I have the Secretary of the Interior and the Attorney General telling me that they have committed, I don't know, if I can't believe them, I don't know who I can believe.
You've touched upon this, but would you like to elaborate any more on what this settlement agreement means for future generations?
Well, I believe that this will, like the panel before, has stated, this is for the past, compensation for the past. I think that the fact that this is the first victory for many individual Indians is it's so empowering for so many individual Indians that they do have a voice, that they can be heard. And I feel that the young people are learning from this case. They're learning from this case. They're understanding that they have to pay attention, that you have to become very active in the management of your assets. You cannot be passive, and you can't say, oh, the government's going to take care of it for us, because they're not. And so you constantly have to be very active, and I think this case has done that. You know, you cannot believe the number of calls that class council gets and the number of letters and a number of calls. And I would like to invite each and every one of you to my little teeny office in at Blackfeet, where I have boxes and boxes of letters from people that thank you for standing up. Thank you for drawing a line in the sand and saying no more. And we want to make a change. This change has to happen. And I do think that by sitting there, sitting with the government and coming together for a settlement, that we can change together, that the relationship between the Department of Interior, Department of Justice, and individual Indian account holders will improve. And we have to be able to work together to move forward.
Thank you, Eloise. Thank you again.
Thank you for your nice comments.
Thank you.
Our
thank
senior you. Ranking member, the gentleman from Washington.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for being here. And certainly, I think it needs to be acknowledged the long time period by which you have been involved in this. I have said in this committee on other occasions where there are settlements, not necessarily Indian settlements, but other settlements, that generally speaking, those are very tough decisions, but the good part about it, generally speaking, is they are decided by the people that are involved, and I applaud that process. I think that generally is good. You heard today, however, that there are some questions regarding the transparency and the understanding of what this settlement means. Very legitimate, I think, and I think that process needs to be followed. Maybe one thing that that you could do to help that is to share all of your, I think you call letters to Eloise, with all of the people that have questions about that. I mean, listen, if it's transparency, then for goodness sakes, share all of that information, and you can get to a point of an understanding. I mean, I think that's what we all want. But there are some legitimate questions out there. Let me focus a bit, though, at least from my understanding here of the attorney fees, because there was questions that were raised on all of that. Now, your initial, as I understand it, your initial lawsuit was because of the accounting, and you said that was impossible, so therefore you came to a settlement on that. Now, my understanding of the total amount of dollars of that part of it, the accounting, is roughly $300 million. The non-litigated claims that's part of that is about $1.1 billion, nearly three times as much. Yet the attorney fees come out of that portion, as I read the settlement. So that means that part of the damage claims, correct me if I'm wrong, you said you weren't necessarily happy that was part of the settlement agreement, but all attorney fees come out of that portion of money. I'm just asking you if
I'm going to take a run at the first question, and I'll have Bill Doris, our attorney, talk about that. But it was not just recently that the trust mismanagement was included in our case. It was a while back, and Bill Doris will talk about where the district court had said that you are now to include the accounting of trust assets other than just the funds. And so that became a part of this case early on, and I can't remember the exact date, and I'll turn this over to Bill.
Yes, the court did invite the plaintiffs to amend their complaint to add those claims at some point during the course of the case, and that was in approximately 2004. But one of the things I think is important to understand is that from the very outset, when we asked for an accounting, one of the natural outgrowths of an accounting, once you determine how well the trust has been managed or mismanaged, you then have a restatement of accounts. So in one sense, money was always part of this case, in that one of the outgrowths from the accounting itself would be a restatement of the accounts. Now, one of the great benefits that we got for most of the plaintiff class and what will be the trust administration class is that they have the opportunity now, without further litigation, to collect money tax-free to settle those claims. However, we were very careful in the settlement agreement to make sure that if they did not want to take the advantage of that, they could opt out and have all of their rights still preserved. And that's very clear in the settlement agreement. Now, one of the issues that the district court will have to determine in deciding what the right amount of attorney's fees is, because that is not decided, that will ultimately be for the discretion of the court, is that normally in this district, ranges are 20% to 30% recovery for attorney's fees. As Ms. Cobell was indicating, if you look at the full $3.4 billion amount, an award of $100 million would be only 3%. But one of the issues that the district court will have to determine after it hears from all of the class members is what percentages to apply and to what funds. Should it only apply to the historical accounting portion of the $1.4 billion, or should something be given to the attorneys for perhaps not litigating fully the trust administration claims, but still getting those benefits for the class? So that will be an issue for the court to decide. But let me also tell you, these claims have been investigated very thoroughly before we settled them. As part of our accounting claim, we had extensive research and analysis done by experts in terms of how much oil, gas, other minerals, timbers, grazing rights, ranching, all of the various assets from the plaintiff class, what should the government have collected on that? And we had extensive expert analysis done so that we felt like we were in a very good position when we settled these claims, though they're subject to an opt-out, to get a fair settlement for the plaintiffs.
Let me respond by simply saying I'm not an attorney. And I appreciate your response in legalese. I'm going to have to go back and digest that in my way with the information that I have and what you're saying. If you take the total 3.4, over half of that is something in future claims, and yet you're saying that should be part of the, as I understand it, that should be part of the pot by which attorney compensation comes from. I just have a question, and so let me end here, but ask this of both of you. As I mentioned earlier to the Justice and Interior, hearings like this, it's good to have these hearings because it brings out issues that need to be resolved. There's going to be some questions, obviously, as our staff kind of digest what you said. And we would obviously send you some questions so that we could, you know, further explore, so we can understand what was said here. If we could get your quick response, I asked Justice and Interior because they turned around my questions in a two-week time period. If you could follow that would be very helpful, because Ms. Cobell, you said timing is of the essence. Obviously, timing is the essence of us because we are part of this whole formula. I mean, if it was settled without any monetary damages, we wouldn't be part of it. But there's monetary damages. That means that it brings us into this, and we have to understand what we are doing in a proper way to make the right decision. We can only do that if we have information that satisfies our issues too. And let me just simply conclude as I open this. Settlement agreements, from my point of view, are generally a very, very good way to go, simply because that the people that are involved are ones that are making a decision. But there are always questions that come of that, and we certainly heard that today. I think those things need to be resolved so we can feel comfortable in going forward with the settlement agreement. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. When Ms. Cobell filed a lawsuit, this was in 1996, I had this crazy idea. I said, why can't we just get some of that money from the Interior Department, since it is owing to Indian Country, and establish some kind of a scholarship fund, hopefully that maybe Indian Country will give approval to something so that we could utilize. This was 14 years ago, and I'm just so happy to hear that one of the factors that was given into your negotiations is that there will be a scholarship fund. Can you elaborate on that a little more, Ms. Cobell? How much is going to be?
The scholarship fund is $60 million, and of course I wanted $100 million, but I had to give in to $60 million for a scholarship fund, but it's for all individual Indians that would like to pursue their education, and no matter if it be at tribally controlled colleges, universities, or vocational schools. I think this is a very good move. We've already had different private foundations that want to match the scholarship fund. So it's a great opportunity for individual Indians to get educated. And I just hope that every single one of them take on land issues and get educated in that area to continue to understand the management of their land. And one of these days, they're I think that Mr. Nunez talked about his association, and I think it's really important to have young people start having associations and having places for individual Indians to go and to learn the expertise that has to be known in order to manage your own assets, to improve your own quality of life.
I, for one, certainly would absolutely support your suggestion that it should be a $100 million pot, yeah, specifically for scholarship funds, because I honestly believe that that is only for the betterment and not only the future of Indian Country, but for the young generations coming up in the United States. Just wanted to share with you a little bit of how much I enjoyed very much. I believe he was a Lakota, Mr. Vina Deloria, how much I deeply enjoyed reading some 20 books that he had written, and one of them was Custer Died for Your Sins, and I think the other book was God is Red. I hope my colleagues will have a chance to read those two books, because I think it tells a lot about the, well, I must say that Mr. Deloria is certainly one of my admirers, but I will want to say, Ms. Cobell, thank you for your patience, and realize there's a lot of questions raised about what's going to happen now, and hopefully that there will be a better understanding in Indian Country about what you've tried to do and what you have achieved, and with the help of the attorneys that have been willing to do all of this on behalf of Indian Country for some 14 years now. I do want to thank you. Chairman, has any more questions?
Mr. Chairman,
please.
Can I use this special time to officially say goodbye to Marie Howard? Marie Howard has been one of the bright spots that makes you want to continue to come back and testify before these committees. And she's just been a committed, and I don't know what we'll do without her. Goodbye, Marie.
Thank you very much. Without any further statements, the hearing is adjourned.